meeting in Nashville. Anyway, I'm pleased to welcome all of you this morning. We want to provide an update on the second Iowa Teacher and Principal Leadership Symposium, which will be held on Monday, August 4th at DMAC in Ankeny at the FFA Enrichment Center. We're holding this symposium because 39 school districts with about one-third of Iowa students are about to launch Iowa's new statewide teacher leadership and compensation system. This marks a very important turning point in Iowa's educational history. Iowa recognizes that giving our children a world-class education requires this sort of transformational change. Iowa's new teacher leadership and compensation system will revolutionize the teaching profession by better utilizing teacher expertise to improve instruction and raise student achievement. It does involve considerable improvements in collaboration among teachers and also really working together as teams to improve student achievement through also improving the preparation of teachers. Between now and 2016-2017, all school districts will have an opportunity to adopt this system. We are moving forward quickly because Iowa's knowledge-based economy requires better preparing our students, all of our students, not just some, for these jobs of the future. They all must learn basic content and skills early so they can master more complex content and the skills of the jobs of this 21st century. It's harder and harder to find jobs that pay middle-class wages if workers don't have the education and skills necessary. We hear all the time from employers, we have good jobs available, we can't find people with the right skill sets. Here are some of the statistics that tell us we must act with urgency to build on Iowa's proud education tradition. Nearly 25% of third graders and about one-third of eighth graders read below proficiency on our state tests. Number two, Iowa used to be a leader on national reading and math tests, but today we rank in the middle of the pack. Number three, just 32% of Iowa's class of 2013 who took the American College Test exam met all four college-ready benchmarks. On August 4th, at that symposium, which, by the way, is open to the public, we'll hear from state, national, and international experts about how teacher leadership can better support the more demanding work that we're asking our teachers to do. We hope Iowans will consider attending the symposium at Des Moines Area Community College in Ankeny, which has capacity of about 450 people. The registration deadline is a week from today, Monday, July 21st. The symposium website is www.educationleadership.iowa.gov. And now it's my pleasure to turn it over to Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Governor Branstad. Nothing inside schools makes a bigger difference in how students learn than a highly effective teacher. Better utilizing the expertise of teacher leaders is essential because it's no longer practical for the principal to be the primary instructional leader in the building. It's also essential because creating new career paths for teachers will make teaching a more attractive profession, and it encourages more talented young people to become teachers and helps us retain top teachers who want to continue in the classroom while taking on new responsibilities and working in greater collaboration with their colleagues. Speakers at the symposium include Iowa's 2014 Teacher of the Year, Jane Smith, and 2014 Secondary Principal of the Year, Aditi Pomphasai. We'll hear from two school districts, Central Decatur and Saydell, which put teacher leadership systems into place in the 2013-14 school year with a federal grant. We'll also learn more about where the 39 school districts are at to launch Iowa's new teacher leadership and compensation system, are headed, and where they're at in the preparation. High-performing school systems around the globe use teacher leadership in different ways, and Singapore has one of the biggest success stories. So we're delighted that the symposium keynote speakers include Vivian Stewart, senior advisor at the Asian Society, and Yiling Lo of the National Ministry of Education in Singapore. Also, Barnett Berry, the CEO of Center for Teaching Quality, will talk about how schools must organize differently. And a student panel will discuss the difference that great teachers make, since they are the people that are most affected. Transforming our schools has begun so that we can give students a world-class education that they deserve. Sustaining this work will depend on the commitment of Iowans on continuing broad bipartisan support in the legislature, and most of all, Iowa's dedicated teachers and principals. The symposium is a place to continue that conversation on how we can do just that. So now I think we'll open it up for questions.
Are there questions on this subject? Nobody has an interest in Iowa's educational future here in the press corps? It is a pretty important issue.
Can we just ask you about something else?
Well, you can, but we think education is real important, and maybe you don't have any questions on it. But I will say that we not only passed significant education reform, we're going to be actively engaged and involved in the implementation of it. We think that is critically important, and we recognize this is something that's not solved by just passing a piece of legislation. The implementation and the effectiveness of that is absolutely going to determine the success of our education system in the future. With that, I'll be glad to respond to other questions as well.
Could I ask you, Governor, you still have the fake website, fake Branstead or Ash Vernon website. Why are you doing that? Some people have said that that's unethical and a dirty trick. Is this something that talked about, you know, providing leadership? Why are you still doing that?
Well, first of all, I would say that this was something that my young campaign staff, you know, this is something that they did. I would say this kind of stuff happens in political campaigns all the time. My focus is primarily on doing my job as governor and also running our positive campaign. But I do recognize, and by the way, the opposition has trackers at just about every public appearance I go to. We deal with these kind of stuff all the time.
So you have young people there. Why aren't you showing some adult leadership?
Well, I think we have, and I think, by the way, that my campaign manager, Jake Ketzner, although he may be young, is very mature for his age, he's done a fantastic job. Every goal that we've given him, today's the deadline, of course, for of the next disclosure. Every goal we've given him in terms of organization, in terms of fundraising, in terms of everything, and you'll get that in the not too distant future. But I think it'll show again. No. Well, the day's not over. You know, we've got more work to do, and we're going to keep at it. But I guess the point I'm making is that I'm very pleased with the progress of our campaign, and I respect the fact that there are many different things that go on in the course of a campaign, but in terms of our message and our organization and our fundraising, I feel that we're on target and exceeding expectations.
I was going to add one thing to that.
First of all, it's not a big deal, and it happens all the time. This has happened to us. It's happened to many other people, and you know, I guess it was a joke, and I guess some people don't have a very good sense of humor in this business. We've tried to keep ours.
Yeah, and you know, the only thing I would add is that as we travel around the state, and we do it often, we're all over the state, what people are saying to us is, we love your commercial. We love the commercial about everything that's been accomplished over the last 3.5 years. It's energizing, the momentum, it excites us, we're proud of what's happening in Iowa. So really, that's what we're hearing from Iowans as we travel across the state. And but you know what? But that's what we're hearing, because people understand politics are what they are today. And the governor, when he ran last time, we had the National Governors Association, the DGA, that spent $800,000 with a false conservative group trying to call him a liberal. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's what politics are today. And so we're focusing on what we've accomplished over the last 3.5 years. We're focused on the future for Iowa, and we're proud of what we've done in the last 3.5 years. And really, that's what we're hearing from Iowans when we travel across the state.
I don't know. It's going to be up to the campaign people to decide what to do, but that's not our focus. That took a small amount of time and a little bit of money, and it created a lot of controversy for the opposition. I guess, you know, that's part of what strategy is in political campaigns. Keep them distracted on things that are meaningless, and we're going to focus on things that are important. And we're focusing on jobs. We're focusing on reforming and improving education. We got the state's financial house in order. I mean, I thought it was pretty telling that a guy from Illinois sent a letter to the editor of the newspaper in Peoria, saying that, you know, after watching our commercial on Quincy television, maybe we ought to contract with Governor Branstad to run the state of Illinois, because he's run Iowa a lot better than the leaders in Illinois have run their state. So I think our message is getting across, even across the borders, where people are watching the message in Illinois and other states. Governor Heineman told me that, Sylvia Burwell, the new director of HHS, met in a private meeting with the governors yesterday. Yes, many governors are very disappointed that they have not been kept informed, that the federal government has failed to secure the border, and then they have placed students without the participation or knowledge of the governors in their states. Now, as I understand what's happened, what's happened to these kids that have come here illegally, they have been placed in oftentimes on military installations, and then they've looked for other placements. But there's grave concern about the dramatic increase in the amount of illegal children that are coming here. And I think Governor Perry, I saw him also interviewed, saying that, you know, they really need to do a better job of securing the border so they don't get here in the first place. And the president did not go to the border. I know even some of the Democratic congressmen felt the administration has not taken this as seriously as they should. So, and I think we as governors want to do what we can to make sure that our people are kept informed, and we do the right thing. No, I'm not aware of any, and there's been no contact from the federal government to the state of Iowa about housing children here.
Would you want them here?
No. I just think the first thing we need to do is secure the border, and I do have empathy for these kids, and I want to make, but I also don't want to send the signal that send your kids to America illegally. That's not the right message. So we are very compassionate people, and we want to treat everybody well. And we're concerned about kids in Africa. We're concerned about kids in Central America. When I was president of Des Moines University, we had medical students that would go and provide medical services to people in Central and South America and in Africa and Asia and other places in the world. But just because we're an empathetic and supportive country doesn't mean that we can take everybody People need to know that there is a legal way to come to this country, and they need to follow the rules.
So, just to be clear, you don't want any of these children in Iowa, even if they have relatives?
Well, no. I guess what I'm saying is, we need to, as a nation, secure the border and protect our own citizens. We do need to make sure that children are not abused and that they are treated fairly.
I'm wondering what you've heard of the Pews.
Of what?
The Pews, P-E-W-S, the Catholic bishops of Iowa, issued a statement asking for the humanitarian treatment and asking Catholics to be prepared to welcome these children. I'm wondering what you've heard as you go to Mass.
Well, as I said, I was in Tennessee here recently, so yeah, but I have not heard a great deal. I do know that and my wife, by the way, is on the board of Holy Family School. It's probably the most diverse school in Iowa. I think over 90% of the kids are minority, and we are very interested and very supportive and have contributed financially to support education for these children, and we want to make sure that they're treated appropriately. We also believe in the United States Constitution and the rule of law, and that people need to abide by the laws of this nation, and that means that you don't come here illegally. You need to abide by the rules, and so we have a delicate balance between being compassionate and supportive of children, and at the same time believing in the rule of law and protecting the integrity of our borders, and to prevent dangerous and violent things from occurring. Well, he is chairman of the Republican Governors Association, and he's doing a fantastic job. I got an opportunity to visit with him briefly at the governor's meeting. He's setting an all-time record in terms of fundraising, and he and former Governor Tom Kaine and Donald Trump did an event for me in New Jersey as well. We're going to have a big rally at the Mississippi Valley Fairgrounds, which I think the ticket price is everything from $25 on up to maybe $5,000. But we're hoping to have a very successful fundraiser and attract a lot of people. He's a very good retail politician. He's a guy that is decisive and is not afraid to make tough decisions. And he inherited a mess in New Jersey. He followed a crook, Corzine, and he straightened it out. He got the state's financial house in order without raising taxes, and he's been a real innovator and a leader, and we're appreciative to have his leadership of the Republican governors. And he points out that he's not the only one. A lot of other governors are helping as well, and so we've had a very successful effort. We have a lot of Republican governors that were elected in 2010 that are up for re-election. And we're very optimistic about winning most of those, if not all of those races. And there's some states that we might be able to pick up, one of them next door.
Would you like to see him run for president?
You know, I love governors. And I want to say that governors and former governors have been a great help to me. Governor Perry, Governor Jindal, former Governor Bush, Governor Walker, Governor Christie. And I don't want to leave them out either. I would say I think and the recently completed Mary Fannin, the governor of Oklahoma, Governor Fallon, excuse me, and the governor of New Mexico.
Martinez,
yeah. And she's I think she's going to have a bright future as well. So not that it's just limited to governors, but They're a good group, and we certainly appreciate and it's great to be the governor of Iowa because they all want to be your friends. So that's a good place to be.
Governor,
yes, sir.
Can you tell us about the pipeline? And when you went to Houston last year for the big fundraiser where all these rich people were giving you money, did you know about this?
No. Well, I hate to tell you, but I found out about it in the newspaper same way a lot of other people did. This is, as I understand it, a proposal that's a very beginning stage. You know, I am Governor Dalrymple's a friend of mine. Great things are happening in North Dakota through the Bakken, you know, both the natural gas and oil. And there's a lot of concern about transporting that by train and doing it by pipeline would be safer and more economical, but there is a very extensive process that has to be utilized for approval of any pipeline, and that is handled through the utility board. And as I understand it, this is just at the very beginning stages, so I would expect this is something that would take considerable time, and there's a lot, I think, to be learned about this in terms of whether or not this is something that's feasible. And then obviously you have to work with all the farmers whose property would be affected by it and all of that. So this is a process that I expect. Well, first of all, I'm just finding out about it, and I expect that it's something that will take a considerable amount of time to be decided through the appropriate channels. I have not taken a position on it. I just want to learn more about it, and I want to make sure that the procedures are appropriately followed. The utility board will, you know, have an important role to play in this, as they do on any pipeline or easement project.
You don't get decisions faster than the administration is making on the
piece. Well, I would hope so, but that's been languishing for years and years, and a lot of people are concerned. And the difference, of course, is that's an international pipeline, and that's the reason why the federal government's involved. Because, and by the way, I met with the Canadians, Ambassador Gary Dewar, great name. He's a former premier, which means premier is equivalent to governor for one of their provinces, and he is now the ambassador to the United States. And he's got this little sign on his desk that says "Can Do." He's from Canada, and his name is Dewar, so he's got a can-do attitude. Anyway, they have been extremely successful. I spent some time with him at the governor's meeting, and obviously they are very interested in generating support for the Keystone Pipeline, and I've been very disappointed the administration has not moved more expeditiously on this issue. I have never met him, and I don't know anything about him. I only know, you know, what the public knows through the media. That's all we know about it.
As far as you know, they're not campaign donors.
Oh, no. In fact, you know, I'm a strong proponent of renewable fuels. So I don't have a great deal of support from the oil industry. They consider me to be, you know, an advocate for renewable fuels, and I have been pretty outspoken and pretty direct about the fact that I'm, by the way, since you brought that up, why hasn't the EPA decided on this issue of the renewable fuel standard? We were promised that decision would be made by the end of June. Here we are, the middle of July, it's still not been made. You know what's happened to the price of corn since they started this foolishness? Corn has gone from $5.50 a bushel to below $4 a bushel. I'm talking about below the cost of production. So this is an issue that I do get exercised about. The EPA has a responsibility. They've been using outdated, inaccurate information. We have supplied them with updated information. We believe that they should restore the robust renewable fuel standard, which has worked since 2005, helped reduce our dependency on foreign oil, created all kinds of jobs in this state, increased farm income, and now they're caving in to big oil for some reason. I don't understand why. And they have delayed and delayed and delayed. I've met, I think, three times with Gina McCarthy on this issue. We were assured it would be decided by June, and here we are mid-July. Who knows when they're going to finally make a decision? But this is just typical of the EPA and the federal government and the fact that they're really damaging America's competitiveness.
You told us previously you support the Keystone pipeline. Why wouldn't you support this one as well?
Well, the Keystone pipeline has been around a lot longer. It doesn't go through the state of Iowa. This one is a new proposal that does go through the state of Iowa. Growing up on a farm in Iowa, I know that if you put a pipeline through, you also have a number of issues to deal with, including farm tile lines and things like that, crossing rivers and all of that kind of stuff. And so those are a lot of things that we need to learn about on this new proposal. Very different from the Keystone Pipeline, which mainly goes through western states where they don't have as intensive of agriculture and where, the knowledge and information has been available for some time. It's been studied extensively, for years.
The DNR apparently knew about this. They didn't inform you before?
I don't know when the DNR found out about this, but the DNR and a utility board will be actively involved in this. No. As I said, this has just come up in the last few weeks. So it's a brand new proposal.
When Governor Christie is here, are you going to ask him to pull the ad they're running? You talked about the people are telling you that they like the positive ads. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the one blemish in this whole campaign that isn't necessarily positive.
Well, the Republican Governors Association. Yes, we are a member of them, and we're very appreciative. And I will say the Republican Governors Association has, I think, done a great job of helping not only me, but the governor of Georgia and the governor of South Carolina, a number of other states. And we certainly do appreciate the work that they've done.
Is that negative?
I think that ad is asking some questions of Jack Hatch. Why? I have disclosed 24 years of my taxes. He's only disclosed 1 year when he knew he was running for governor. His campaign manager promised to do the previous 4 years. Why won't they disclose those previous 4 years? I think that's a legitimate question because he served in the state Senate and he's made millions of dollars while he was serving in the state Senate off of these tax credits. And I think the public has a right to know how much he's made and how much taxes he's paid.
It also raises questions about eminent domain and how appropriate it is in trumping individual property rights. That issue is going to come to play in this pipeline.
Well, interesting about eminent domain. There's only been one gubernatorial veto overridden in the last 50 years in the state of Iowa. And it was a veto on eminent domain by Governor Vilsack. There were only 6 members of the Senate that voted against that bill, and Jack Hatch was one of them. There were only 8 members of the Senate that voted against overriding the veto. So it's pretty extraordinary to have a veto overridden in this state. But in that particular case, Jack Hatch was on the losing side on both of those, on both the original vote and the override on eminent domain. Eminent domain is a controversial subject, and there is a very limited, legitimate reason to use eminent domain for a public purpose. A pipeline or a road or a bridge, something like that, is a public purpose. I think what people get concerned about is when property is taken from one individual and then utilized by another one for a commercial development that might be an opportunity for somebody to make a profit, as opposed to a poor individual who's having their property, their home, or their business being taken away from them. That's where people are concerned about the abuses. That's why the legislation on eminent domain has been so critically important. And it is the only item veto, I mean, not item veto, it's the only veto overridden in this state in 50 years. So it is an issue of consequence. It's a delicate balance, and the individual's property rights in this country are very important. There are sometimes instances where there's a significant public good that would authorize the use of eminent domain. I think it should be used only in a very limited circumstances, and primarily rights of way should be acquired through negotiations and from willing participants.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.
For